Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome, everybody, to this week's exciting episode.
Yep, 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 yep.
Is that it?
That's all I got at the moment.
Improvisational skills, you know. Josh, you are quite well-travelled, are you not?
Yes. Yeah, I've been to a few countries.
You've been all over the United States.
Yeah.
You've been to Australia. You've been, like, the Caribbean and that.
Europe, yeah.
Europe, yeah.
Fair few places, yeah.
Have you ever been to New Jersey in the United States?
No. I've been to New York. That's the closest to New Jersey.
Yeah, close, isn't it?
Yeah.
New Yorkers and New Jerseys hate each other, don't they?
I think so. Yeah.
From what, judging by How I Met Your Mother.
Oh, right.
That TV series, because they class themselves as New Yorkers, don't they?
Yeah.
Like, I hate New Jersey. I hate it. but that, New Jersey is where our story is set today.
New Jersey.
New Jersey. Yeah, particularly in an area called the Pine Barrens.
Ooh.
It's in a lovely little foresty region.
Nice.
And if you'd spent some time in the Pine Barrens around about the late 1980s, you might have come across a little photocopied pamphlet that might have been left on a coffee table in a coffee shop, or in a magazine rack, or even as a leaflet in a newspaper or something like that.
Okay, just a pamphlet.
Yeah, just a pamphlet. And at the top of the pamphlet, the title read, Ong's Hat, Gateway to the Dimensions.
Okay.
Is that perking your interest?
You've tickled my teats.
Yeah. Well, it certainly would. And it followed up with a short little paragraph saying, you would not be reading this article if you had not already penetrated halfway to the Institute of Chaos Studies. You have been searching for us without knowing it. Now, that's quite a tantalising little statement, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the chaos bit that throws me off.
Okay, so this this pamphlet was published by an amalgamation of two groups of people. The Institute of Chaos Studies, obviously, and another group called the Moorish Science Ashram.
The Moorish?
Moorish Science Ashram, yes.
Okay. Oh, not Moorish as in, like, that food is Moorish. I want more.
It's pretty much spelt that way, yeah.
I want more science.
More science. Yeah, so the Moorish Science Ashram was a commune that was started in 1978.
Okay.
At a place called Ong's Hat.
And that's the name of the place.
It used to be just a small little hamlet. If you went back into the 1800s, I think around about 1860, it got to its most vibrant and its most lively There was, because it was sort of tucked up out of the way. You know, there was a lot of like bootlegged alcohol because of
moonshine.
Sort of that sort of thing going on there. And all it was just a small hamlet, a collection of huts and barns and whatnot, just wooden huts. Where just a few people lived, a handful of people. Obviously, by the time it got to 1978, the place had just been abandoned. It was a deserted. And there was little more than just a single hut or shack left there. But the guy called Wally Fard, who created the Moorish Iron Science Ashram. Why is that so hard to say? Moorish Science Ashram. Wally Fard invented that or founded it. And it was a little commune that he made up for him and his disciples. Now, Wally Fard was actually like a carpet salesman.
Right.
But he had been all over the Middle East and the Far East buying and selling exotic carpets. And while he was out there, he was sort of studying their belief systems, you know, their meditations and that sort of thing. He studied like Tantra and, you know, loads of stuff like that. He travelled all over the place buying and selling carpets. And he obviously did fairly well at it because obviously in 1978, when he headed back to the United States, he found this little area in the Pine Barrens that he said he felt it had really good spiritual rhythms.
Spiritual rhythms?
Yeah, there's some good chi or something in there, you know?
Okay.
In this area. And he was actually able to purchase 200 acres of this Pine Barrens forest land.
He must have been one hell of a carpet salesman.
Well, Turkish rugs ain't cheap, are they?
No, true, yeah. And they do look pretty.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that was what his speciality had been, was maybe importing them or something like that. I don't know if my research didn't really tell me that. But yeah, he managed to purchase 200 acres of this lovely forest woodland, and as it would have it, Ong's hat was in that 200 acres. Obviously, by this point, you know, it was mostly just derelict. There was only sort of one little building that he could really use. But him and his disciples started doing the place up, you know, moving in there. And they created this commune, this little sort of spiritual commune where they did their meditations and they practiced pseudoscience, basically, you know.
Okay. That's come up a few times in our podcast.
Yeah.
Pseudoscience.
Yeah. And they were quite happy. They were keeping themselves to themselves, just living their merry lives, just doing their little pseudoscience meditation experiments and stuff like that, you know.
Okay.
Seeing how like spirituality can affect scientific results, I guess.
So is it almost like a yoga retreat before they were called yoga retreats?
Sort of, yeah.
Yeah,
like, kind of like that.
Kind of place you go to, you chill out, do a bit of yoga and get in tune with yourself and help each other out.
Yeah.
And...
But obviously he was quite confident that what he was doing was a science, because obviously he called it Moorish Science Ashram. So, you know, over the years, he did manage to attract a few people, you know, more and more disciples started joining his little commune. And two of them were called Frank and Althea Dobbs. They were twins, and they were actually proper scientists or trying to be proper scientists. What had actually happened with those was they'd got kicked out of Princeton University. And it's quite strange the reason why they got kicked out, because they had created this Institute of Chaos Studies and they were doing their chaos studies while they were at Princeton University, and the science department did not like it at all. You know, they're going for their PhD or whatever, you
know. Yeah, yeah.
And the science department called it seditious nonsense and kicked them out.
Wow, okay. So conflict of interest kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, obviously, Princeton University just thought it was pseudoscience. You know, there's no real scientific merit to anything that they were doing.
Yeah.
And just said, look, you're not really welcome here on your way. So they went and found the Moorish Science Ashram commune at Ongshat, and they moved in there, made their own little building, I guess, one of the huts that was there, and they set up the Institute of Chaos Studies at Ongshat and started collaborating with the Moorish Science Ashram.
Okay.
Pitching their various different skills together, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
And they were very interested in quantum physics. They wanted to get into the very small.
Okay.
And so they created a machine that they called the Egg.
Mate, I have to just say, you always surprise me with the names of the people. They always seem to have names that don't seem like names. What was right. it? Walter?
Wally Fard.
Wally Fard.
Yeah.
And now they've got some sort of technology device called the Egg.
The Egg, yeah.
Right, okay.
No, this gets even more ludicrous.
Wow.
The Egg was made out of a sensory deprivation chamber.
Yeah.
You know, the things that you fill with water and you float in and you're meant to just, like, in complete darkness and you deprive yourself from all sensory input. Well, they created this egg out of one of those. They modified it. So you put on a helmet that would do weird stuff. They can monitor your brain waves and that sort of thing. But the idea of this egg was they wanted to study... What they wanted to do was to be able to shrink someone down
right.
to the subatomic level. Yeah?
Yeah, I'm following
you. So that they could actually experience and observe the point where a wave becomes a particle. And in physics, this is known as the collapse of the wave function.
Okay. Are we talking waves as in, like, frequencies, like radio waves?
Yeah, sound waves, yeah. Radio waves, even light waves and everything like that. Because, have you ever heard of the double slit experiment?
No.
Right, this is kind of philosophy and science all mixed together, but the thing, in, like, quantum physics and that, scientists have... created this experiment where imagine you've got a wall or a board or something, and it's got two slits cut in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now you've got a point of light on one side of it, and a camera sensor on the other side of it.
Mm-hmm.
And if they fire one single proton at the card through the card, now a light wave will travel through both slits at the same time.
Yeah.
And then project a very observable pattern on the sensor behind, mm-hmm.
Yeah?
You'll see those slits repeated as the waves cross each other, and what you'd see on the sensor is probably about five or six different slits where the light's hitting it. That only happens when you're not looking at it. If you're actually observing it at the time that you fire that single proton through the slits, it'll only go through one or the other.
Wow.
Okay? And this is why people say that if you say you understand this kind of... oh, my God, the word's just gone clean out of my head. Quantum physics.
Yeah, okay.
They say if you understand quantum physics, you don't understand quantum physics because of experiments like this. Because it just doesn't, the results alter dependent on whether they're being observed or not. All of this quantum physics stuff is all based on that sort of thing. And this is what they were trying to do. They wanted to physically shrink themselves down to subatomic levels so that they could actually observe this happening, where the collapse of the wave function, so they can actually see whether it is a wave or a particle.
Okay, I'm with you. Actually with you, yeah. You've broken
it
down.
Now, we're going to debunk that, because it's impossible to do that.
I was thinking that.
Right.
Like Ant-Man.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Because you imagine, right, let's think about it, right. everything's made up of atoms.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? And an atom is made up of protons and electrons. The protons are in the middle and the electrons orbit.
Yeah.
Kind of like, imagine the sun is the proton and the planets are the electrons. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how it goes. Now, if you were to take a proton and blow it up to the size of a double-decker London bus and sit it in the middle of London, in Piccadilly Square, Piccadilly Circus, right, the electrons that are orbiting it would be orbiting around about out by the M25, you know, miles away.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's how much space is in an atom, empty space.
Mm.
So 99.999999% of your body is actually empty space.
Cool. That's hard to wrap my head around.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? When you think, but so these guys, Frank and Althea Dobbs, they were trying to figure out a way to shrink the amount of space in the atom, collapse the atom in on itself,
mm-hmm.
so that you could shrink down to that subatomic level. But like I say, it's impossible because when that atom is, as the electrons are orbiting the proton, if you're trying to decrease the distance between the electron and the proton, it's going to orbit a lot faster.
Wow. Okay. Which
takes energy that it hasn't got.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's kind of impossible. And also, if you were able to manage to remove that empty space from the atoms and compress them all down, what you've effectively done is crushed yourself into being, in essence, what a black hole is.
Yeah. Okay. Also, surely if... I mean, there's no way of doing it. But if you were to shrink yourself down to that size,
mm-hmm.
you're going to have problems trying to get back to bigger size as well.
Yeah.
But also...
on a more fundamental basis, you're never, ever going to be able to get subatomic because it's the atom that you're trying to shrink that extra space out. You can't get smaller than the atoms that make you up. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, that makes more sense. Yeah, you can't, can you? It's just not going to work. Yeah, it's insane.
So it's not going to work. But they tried it.
How? What did they try it with?
Well, with the egg. Oh, right. They thought they were serious scientists, and they tried it. And they got a volunteer to get into this egg, and they were going to shrink him down to see if he could find this particle wave function. The collapse of it.
Team Princeton now.
They activated the machine,
mm-hmm.
and it didn't shrink.
Oh, no.
Do you know what it did? It disappeared completely.
What did?
The egg.
No.
The whole machine, the whole sensory deprivation chamber thing that they called the egg, disappeared in front of their eyes. And obviously, they didn't expect this. They thought that they'd see it get smaller. They didn't think that it'd just vanish. So they were in absolute turmoil. For 7 minutes, it was completely gone.
Okay.
And then it suddenly reappeared.
With the man inside?
Man got out with a massive, great beaming smile. And he had a story of what had happened to him. In that, when he got out of the egg, after it had disappeared, he found himself... in the Pine Barrens forest, exactly the same area, but there were no huts around. Ong's hat had completely disappeared. And as he ventured out further, he couldn't find any traces of civilization at all. It was as though he'd been transported to a different dimension where humans had not evolved.
So would he have gone back in time?
No. I think it was in the same time.
Oh, okay.
Because he said all the animals were the same, all the trees and everything were kind of pretty much the same as how it was around the village. Mm. But he was just in a place that was completely devoid of human life.
That's so strange.
I don't know how long he actually claimed to be there. It may have been just that 7 minutes, or he may have been there a week on his own, you know, and then come back and it had only been 7 minutes in our time or whatever. But this is what he claimed. So they started... you know, carrying on this experiment, seeing what it was like in this alternate dimension.
Mm-hmm.
And like I say, they put out these leaflets, you know, to welcoming people, telling people what was going on out there, getting it like published in like these different magazines and stuff, like paranormal magazines and stuff. They were starting to attract some attention.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, not long after this, a nuclear power station close by had a bit of an accident. Not like a meltdown or nothing, but there was an emergency. Right. And like government was called in, and they wanted the Ong's hat, this Institute of Chaos Studies and the Moorish Science Ashram, to vacate the area. And they started leaning on them quite heavy, you know, getting more and more aggressive with their approach. So rather than pack up and move to a different location, they decided they were going to move dimension. So they loaded up all their gear into the egg and off they went, mate.
What, all of them?
Yeah, all of them. And literally the only thing they left was the little wooden hut that they'd been working out of to start with. And they all disappeared to this other dimension. And apart from the odd leaflet and stuff that they'd actually sent telling their story, they said that they do occasionally come back, mostly for things like computers and books and large amounts of coffee. You know, that's what scientists live on, isn't it?
Yeah.
Books, computers and coffee. And that was it. Nobody ever seen or heard of them ever again.
Wow. Still to this day?
To this day.
I have so many questions. This is nuts.
What is your first question?
My first question is... I'm guessing it was several trips. They couldn't have all fit into the egg.
Oh, no, well, no. It's a sensory deprivation chamber, isn't it? So they would have only had to dismantle things and load it up, you know, trip after trip after trip, sending this stuff into another dimension. And obviously, I don't know how they powered their computers when they got there, because there wouldn't be any electric.
Yeah.
And this is the whole crazy thing. I mean, like, these people were living in the 80s and 90s at this point.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Or 1980s, and can you imagine what would inspire a bunch of scientists that are used to our way of life, when we have like electricity and hot and cold running water and stuff like that, to literally go back to being hunter gatherers or cavemen?
Yeah,
I mean, it makes it sound kind of unbelievable, doesn't it?
Yeah,
do you know why that is?
Because it didn't happen.
Because it's completely made up. Sorry.
Tell you what, that was a good story, though.
Yeah?
Yeah. That is like a sci-fi film.
Yeah, in actual fact, this was a story that was authored by Peter Wilson in 1988. It was published in a magazine called Edge Detection. Okay?
Okay.
So, yeah, it was completely made up, and... I'm not sure. It might have been like a collaboration, Peter Wilson, with a good friend of his called Joseph Matheny. Joseph Matheny is known as the story's primary creator. Yeah?
Right. Okay.
He was a writer from Chicago, and he was really big into like alternate reality and games to that effect. And he thought this was just, I mean, this being the 80s, before the age of the internet, and, you know, a lot of computer games were very, very simple. He thought this was quite a good game to do. So it was actually him, Joseph Matheny, that had gone round the coffee shops, just leaving these leaflets out, putting them inside newspapers and leaving them on magazine racks and stuff for people to find, just because he wanted to make this hype.
Oh, so he actually did do that then? He went around with the leaflets and stuff? Yeah. And so the people that gathered were real?
Yeah.
But the actual... Oh,
people, even to this day, will they travel and walk the Batona Trail.
Okay.
Which goes, I believe, through Ong's Hat or very near it. And people, even to this day, come from all over the world to walk the Batona Trail and see if they can pick up some vibes or, you know, find this portal to another dimension. It still goes on. People still believe this story. And the reason why is because in the late 1990s, obviously the internet started taking off.
Yeah.
And Joseph Matheny thought that this would be a great thing for the internet, you know, the early internet forums, you know, pages where people were discussions and that sort of thing. And he published it everywhere. And this story became the very first viral internet hoax.
Damn. Okay.
That is quite an accolade, huh?
Yeah, and this is as the internet is being born kind of thing, the start.
Yeah, very early internet, not like what we know nowadays with like Facebook and Amazon and all that sort of thing. These were very basic web pages. You could only use like, 16 colours on them or whatever at the time.
Yeah.
You know, it was very, 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 very basic. But that's what he did. And he had interviews and stuff. About the story, and he always claimed in his interviews that it was just a game, and it was all in good fun. It was just, you know, a bit of a mystery for people to try and solve or to try and be involved with.
I get you.
He never ever thought it was like serious.
Yeah, I see. I'm getting the same vibes as like the Dybbuk box, where the guy just admitted.
Yeah, like, kind of like that. Yeah,
it's all a false thing.
But they designed it to be. Kind of like, do you know the show Black Mirror?
Yeah, on love Netflix? It. Absolutely
how,
love it.
How that's kind of like close, almost normal.
Yeah.
You know, or very believable, but not quite. It would set in the very near future or an alternate dimension or something like that.
Yeah.
That's what he was aiming for. Or like, I got my notes, Creepypasta. Have you ever heard of Creepypasta?
Yeah.
It's got, again, they're stories that are so close to reality that you believe them. Even though they're completely untrue. And that's what he was trying to create.
I'm with you.
And it kind of backfired on him.
Oh, no.
Because eventually, obviously, you know, he was kind of leaving clues and, you know, a little paper trail, if you like, of things that to give people the idea that it was actually just a game and it wasn't real. In one of the magazines or something where he'd put one of these parts of the story in there, there was an article called I Survived Ong's Hat. And the picture of the family that was featured in this I Survived Ong's Hat was actually the Brady Bunch.
Oh, right.
Literally took a picture of the Brady Bunch and stuck it on his article. You know, so if people couldn't figure out that it was fake, he was kind of like, well, you know,
he wasn't hiding it.
No, but some people really did believe it. They called themselves eggheads.
Wow.
And when he came out and actually said, look, no, this isn't real, we made it all up, it's just a story.
Yeah.
They literally went mental at him. They didn't believe him. They were following him round. They honestly even started camping out in his front garden. He had to escort some people away at gunpoint to get rid of them.
This is nuts.
Yeah, isn't it? So in the end, in 1999, he ended up publishing a book called Ong's Hat, The Beginning, where he literally just put it all there in black and white. This is how we came up with the story. This is how we did it. This is, you know, these were the steps that we took. These are the coffee shops that we laid our, you know.
Yeah.
People got even more infuriated.
And they still believed it?
Yeah, they still believed it.
That makes zero sense.
And he was just getting harassed left, right and centre, online and offline, even in real life.
That is so insane to me that a guy can make something up, tell you I made the whole thing up, show you how, why, if, when, all these things, and say it is fake, and you still have people getting angry saying, no, it's real.
Yeah.
He's the one that made it.
Exactly, yeah. So even releasing a book telling people how fake it was, they weren't believing him. So he thought, you know, if you can't beat them, join them. So he actually then went online and issued a public statement saying, well, you might be kind of right, because they were like, oh, it must be a government conspiracy. They're trying to shut him up. They're trying to make it, you know, trying to make him say that it's fake when it's not.
Yeah.
And so he just played devil's advocate. He was like, yeah, yeah, the government had been on the back and stuff. And, you know, it might actually be true. At least, you know, now I can get on with my life and that sort of thing.
Wow. That was easier for him to carry on the lie.
Yeah. And that's kind of what he does ever since then. He'll quite openly say that it was a story, he made it all up, and then he'll go, but did I?
This guy's
so playing. Even to this day, I mean, I believe that this is a made-up story. I believe him that he made it up. But honestly, even to this day, he's still winding out the wool, you know, he's leaving that trail, just leaving seeds of misinformation. If people want to believe it, they can believe it, and I'll let them.
Yeah,
you know?
He's playing tiddlywinks with our hearts. That's what he's doing.
Yeah.
Can I ask why it's called Ong's Hat?
I'm glad you asked that, because that in its own self is quite a funny story. See, Ong's Hat, obviously, when we go back to like the 1860s that I said about before, where it was like a bootlegging community of moonshine makers and that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Excuse me. There was a man. I'm just going to turn my page over to make sure I get his first name right. Yeah, his name was Jacob Ong.
Jacob Ong.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a, kind of a weird last name, isn't it? Ong. I don't think I've ever heard of it before.
Yeah, it sounds Japanese to me.
Yeah, almost. Ong. I'm not sure what his... Well, obviously he was American, but yeah. He was apparently a very vain man. Or what? Maybe what they call metrosexual these days, you know,
right,
where
he'd
take massive care in his appearance. You know, he'd always got lovely coiffed hair,
Cumberbund,
nicest clothes. Yeah, possibly. He was a bit of a man about the town. He loved his self image, and while he was his prized possession, if you like, was this silk maid. Hardened silk top hat.
Proper top hat.
Proper nice top hat. And he'd just walk about the town, just, you know, lording it over everybody, you know, oh, I'm better than thou sort of thing.
Right, yeah.
And he was a bit of a winner with the ladies for this reason. And allegedly, one night when he was at a local dance, he'd been flirting with one of the local girls and then continued on to start flirting with another of the local girls. And the first girl got very, very jealous.
Yeah.
And she ripped his prized possession straight off his head, slammed it on the ground and stamped all over it, ruining the hat.
His favourite hat.
His favourite hat. And he got in such a huff. He took a real sulk, he picked his hat up, and he said, well, I can't wear that anymore, and he threw it into a tree, where it remained, apparently, for several years, and everybody just kind of knew, started calling the place, oh, that's Ong's Hat, that's where Ong threw his hat in the tree, and the town actually then became known as Ong's Hat.
That's quite clever.
And now, obviously, that's transferred to this legend, that is also now known as Ong's Hat.
Wow. So let me summarise this up. You have
microphone stand.
You have a carpet salesman
mm-hmm.
that then... Does he just come across Ong's Hat?
Yeah. Well, I guess he's looking for somewhere to settle down. And obviously the spiritual rhythms were more than he could...
So they called out to him. He finds Ong's hat. He starts up a company called the Chaos Theory.
No, that's the Moorish Science Ashram.
Oh, right, that's it. The give me
that,
more
that
science.
That was his little commune, yeah.
They teamed up with the Chaos Institute.
Yeah.
They then built this thing called the Egg.
Yeah.
Because they wanted to shrink themselves down to smaller than an atom to find the wave...
Collapse of the wave function.
Collapse of the wave for science.
Yeah.
But instead, they shrunk... Well, the thing just disappeared into another dimension.
For 7 minutes.
So then they were pressurized into leaving the area.
Yeah.
So they said, fine, we will. Well, we're going to go to the other dimension.
Yeah.
So they packed up their things and they went back to, you know, prehistoric days.
Basically, turn themselves into cave dwellers.
And then it turns out that this whole thing was a story, and this guy's story, people don't believe him that it's a story. So then he comes out with another book in 1999 explaining that he made the whole thing up and every detail about it. The people got even angrier. So then he switches sides and says, I'm going to go double down on this and it could be the government. So does it end there? Is he still...
That is the end of my tale, basically. That is my presentation. Which side of it do you believe? Do you believe that he made it up the story, or do you believe that he made up the conspiracy, or do you think it is a conspiracy?
Right, so to current day, to now, that's where we're at, is do you still have people thinking, this happened?
Yeah.
And is the author still around and everything?
Yeah, he's still alive, yeah.
So he is still, like you said, going, or did I? Or did I make it up?
Yeah.
Wow. That is one hell of a tale. There were so many twists and turns. I didn't know where we were going with it. There was eggs involved. I'll tell you what, one thing is for sure, I said at the start, I'm not sure about the chaos. That was very chaotic.
It's chaotic.
That is chaos.
Yeah.
You know what?
So, we might as well bring this to the paranormality scale.
I think it's a very cool story.
Believability.
I mean, the fact that the guy has said it was made up, I have to... kind of believe the same as you, where I don't think it happened.
Right.
But I find it so hilarious that people get angry that it's made up and they still believe in something.
Yeah. So I suppose this is kind of a mixture between the believability of it and how much you like it.
Yeah. Yeah. It kind of reminds me of Flat Earth in a way, where you have people doing experiments and proving it, that the Earth is a globe, but people are still like, no, just ignore that, the Earth's flat. And it doesn't matter what you say, they're still going to believe that the Earth is flat.
Yeah, and that's what these eggheads are like.
Yeah.
You know, they just won't accept any other theory other than it happened.
You know what? I think a light bulb has gone off in my head where I actually find that quite amusing. And now I'm not as angry at flat earthers as I once was. I now actually think that's quite funny because they're just kind of trolling everyone, aren't they?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
You know what? I'm not going to beat around the bush anymore. So five is down the middle.
Yeah.
I love the story, so I'm going to give it a little bit extra.
Yeah.
But because it got debunked and the guy is, well, not officially debunked, but the guy has said it's all made up and everything, you've got to take some away.
Yeah.
So that draws me to the conclusion, I'm going to give it a 5, just straight down the middle.
Straight down the middle. So I was thinking 6.3.
Okay.
Just for the entertainment value of it, I'm just giving it that little bit more. I'm not saying that actually believe the story of the egg and the interdimensional travel and all that sort of thing. But I think it's a very clever story to come up with. To start with, and to do it in the 1980s, just with photocopied pamphlets.
Yeah.
And then for that to go on to become the very first internet viral hoax, it's clever.
Yeah, that is actually. I didn't take any of that into account. And
it was very... I'm saying a 6.3. I don't believe the story at all, but I'm giving it that credence just because I think it's so clever and I wish I'd come up with it myself.
And it was very entertaining. And you know what? Credit to you. You did explain some very scientific things there.
Yeah.
So simple-minded people like me that wouldn't understand, you actually broke it down in a way that's very good.
Oh,
like
thank you.
I actually got to the... I could see where you were going and what you were saying. So I will take that into account as well. You know what? You've changed my mind. You've swayed me a little bit. For you, I will go... I'll give it a 5.9.
Okay.
I think that's fair. That's
okay.
Fair.
Yeah, okay. So that'd be a 6.1 average.
Yeah, I think that's fair. But I say, I love the story. I love what you did. Very entertaining. But there is that thing that I'm just like, I wish the guy would have just not said he made it up and just carried on with it. I would have found that more funny and more entertaining. I think that guy's great, whoever he is. What was his name?
It was Joseph Matheny.
Yeah. Fair play to him. He's one of my new heroes, I think.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
And if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't have a different opinion on flat earthers now. Like I say, I don't believe in it, but I now have a new appreciation for that kind of like entertainment and trolling and stuff. It's not hurting anyone, is it? It's clearly a bit of a laugh, I think.
Yeah, exactly. That's what he said. It was all designed to be in good fun and good humour.
Yeah. Oh, I've swayed again, mate. I'm going to have to give it a 6.4.
6.4?
Yeah, because that's my kind of prank and entertainment kind of thing. Like,
I suppose it is.
I admire that kind of like, especially a joke that's been going on multiple years.
Oh, decades.
Like
now,
decades.
Yeah.
I actually think that's really good. The more I think about it, the more I'm breaking it down in my head, the more I actually like it. So, yeah, I'll stick with a 6.4.
Okay, so that would give us an average of 6.35 then.
yeah, that's better.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, I really like that guy.
Okay.
It's awesome.
Fair enough. So if you at home have the interdimensional travelling egg, write into us. Let us know. We want to know. Have you actually made it up, though?
Yes. If you collect eggs and have a dozen eggs, let us know.
Let us know. Write in paranormality.uk@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram and TikTok, and you can come and join us our favourite place, which is Discord. You'll find a link down in the description of wherever you found this podcast. And Ong's hat all the way. I love this story. It's just such a funny one. It tickled me, and I knew you'd never find it.
I've never heard of that, but I'm really glad you brought that to the listeners and to myself. Like, it was different. It's still bugging me now because I'm still chuckling at it because the more I'm thinking about the lengths that he went through and the flip-flopping of his opinions and things. And I just imagine just a group of people wearing all like white linen. And
coming
just,
after him like the Ku Klux Klan.
just like they've got pitchforks and they're like, it's real, it's real. And it's like, oh, wait, no, not the Ku Klux Klan. No, more like... Jesus robes.
Oh, right. Okay.
Jeez. No, definitely not. No, that's what I was envisioning, like robes and things and being real hippies.
Oh, yeah, because the commune and the hippie type thing. Yeah, fair
like
enough.
Like a cult just being like, no, it's real. And it's like,
well, let us know what you think at home. Do you believe the story of the egg and the Ong's hat dimensional travel, or do you think that it is just a story that was made up by a couple of intelligent people? Let us know. And until next time, I've been Pirate.
I'm Josh.
And this has been Paranormality UK. Ta-ta.
Ta-ta.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Your personal info, like addresses, phone numbers, and more, are collected and sold by data brokers. But Aura steps in, scanning the web, sending you alerts, and requesting your info be removed. Get Aura's full toolkit, including credit and transaction monitoring, a password manager, VPN, and more. Get a 14-day free trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.